Hello and welcome to the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. Every 2 weeks, experts from AmBOSS, the medical education platform, interview medical students and healthcare professionals to showcase international perspectives on everything in medical school and beyond the textbook.
Welcome to the AmBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. We're your hosts, Sophie Neal and Dr. Tana Schrank. And today, we are honored to host Dr. Nabad Faiz, a resilient individual whose journey from adversity to accomplishment is truly inspiring. Born in Afghanistan and raised in Germany, Dr. Nabad has overcome a number of obstacles to pursue his passion for medicine. He is currently resident physician at Maria Hilf Hospital in cardiology and internal medicine in the west of Germany, where he also manages the emergency department, intensive care unit, stroke unit, and chest pain unit. His commitment also extends beyond the hospital walls. From co-founding the Afghan Diaspora in Germany group to advocating for culturally sensitive healthcare, Nabad's societal engagement is absolutely profound. Join us as we explore his experiences and insights and delve into his ongoing efforts to make a difference. Dr. Nabad Faiz, welcome to the show and thank you for being here with us.
Thank you so much for this warm introduction. Thank you and to welcome to all the listeners.
Thank you very, very much for being here. And I mean, it sounds like your path to medical education has definitely not been an easy one. From fleeing Afghanistan to growing up in Germany and ultimately becoming a very successful medical doctor, what would you say are the biggest challenges you felt you faced on your journey?
When I fled Afghanistan with my family at the age of 4, it was not only the initial adaptation to a foreign culture or foreign country at that time, learning a completely different language. I was not able to speak. Yeah, of course, I was a child, but I was bilingual raised in Persian and Pashto, the two major languages in Afghanistan. I also had to learn German relatively quickly, not just for myself, but because I was the oldest in my family and the one who had to translate official documents for my parents, accompany them to government office. So you could say I was the family's interpreter. The responsibility that has been placed on me was very high at a very young age. And to be honest, it's unfortunate that these hurdles and challenges are still not socially recognized, but rather assumed to be the absolute standard. And from my point of view now, that I believe that it became apparent that in Germany, it's not just a matter of origin, but also a matter of financial means, which my family did not possess at the time. So all of this mixes into a social climate of rejection towards migrants. But thank God this has changed and improved in many areas during the years.
Wow, you sound like you've seen so much that I'm sure has really shaped how you work and how you conduct yourself. And you co-founded the group Afghan Diaspora in Germany, and you've used your social platforms to address cultural discrimination. How does addressing discrimination and promoting inclusivity play a part in your daily life as a physician?
Yeah, well, I think it was during the first lockdown in Germany when a good friend of mine, they approached me and others with this idea. And I thought to myself, it's very interesting from the outset because the Afghan community outside of, for example, the United States, Australia or England are not as organized as they should be. And we were able to successfully not only present ourselves, but the Afghan diaspora, as we call them, in many events, formats, social media appearances, not only to educate the German society, but also to educate ourselves within. And given my own biography and experience, it was for me very clear from the beginning that I wanted to use my platform not only to highlight grievances from incidents that happened around me or us, but also to take active steps and demonstrate how things can be done differently and how they can be done better. Especially as a medical student, I have repeatedly experienced discriminatory behavior, but also discrimination towards patients and healthcare workers who, let's say, openly identified as migrants or not typical Germans, as we call them. But also as a doctor, I've encountered such incidents. And this is why I always try to counteract these behaviors. And if you allow me, I will try to give you two examples what I mean with them. The first, I was a student in my final year. So you have this final year where you work with doctors. And I was in the orthopedics department of the emergency room, and a young woman, apparently from Syria, with a headscarf on, emerged, and she had fallen, she tripped, and she had great pain in her right ankle. So as a student, you're naturally on the forefront of examination, you take the patient's history, and you present your suspected diagnosis to the physician. And the doctor at that time replied to me saying, yeah, the patient shouldn't make a big deal of it. You know, those type of people. Just give her some mild painkillers and we'll check again like in an hour or two. So I was kind of confused because, you know, we have SOPs and this is what I learned. And I said, okay, but wouldn't be an X-ray a good diagnostic tool to see if there might be some fractures and anything? But I wasn't hurt. And after an hour, the patient was still in pain. And I strongly insisted, honestly, on the X-ray. As it turned out, it was unfortunately an ankle that was indeed fractured on multiple places and required and eventually a surgery for the patient. So the thing that occurred to me was that the doctor never reacted. It was more like, yeah, well, bad luck for her. We'll check again. And the other accident was when I was running the emergency department at my hospital, an ambulance brought out a young patient who just had a nose surgery a few days prior and was taking very strong medication, but was now complaining about abdominal pain. So while the patient was still on the stretcher and I received the handover from the paramedic and the doctor, I quickly formed a diagnosis in my head. However, the paramedic and the doctor presenting me the patient commented, yeah, you know, those people, they always exaggerate. And just for you and the listeners to know, the young lady was dark skinned and turned out that she later had severe ulcer like in her stomach and needed high dose IV stomach protection. And we had to charge her in for a couple of days. When I also speak with colleagues from other hospitals, they report similar incidents. It's a culture in medicine that unfortunately, due to the lack of evidence and experience, is oriented towards not believing certain people or not believing that certain people are experiencing pain or symptoms, but rather trivializing them. And I consider this to be extremely dangerous, and I hope that in future we'll have valid data in Germany to counteract this because we practice evidence-based medicine, right? For people, for patients, and we should not discriminate or dismiss their suffering.
Wow, what incredible stories to share. Thank you for sharing that. I think that's really important for people to hear. And the work that you're doing, you know, to try and counteract that is incredibly important. I mean, as well as co-founding the Afghan Diaspora in Germany group, you've also collaborated with the Afghan University of Medical Sciences to support female Afghan medical students. Now, speaking as a mentor and a role model for medical students or future medical students, what are the biggest hurdles that you feel they need to be prepared for?
Yeah, that's a good question. I believe that generally and broadly speaking, every medical student should be aware that they are not only working with people, they're working with people who are suffering, people who are seeking help. And these individuals may also have family members who naturally would like to be informed or kept in the loop, right? Additionally, the patient will eventually be discharged home and we want the patient to return to a good home. So we should assure that home care is sufficient. So as you can see, it's not just about making the right diagnosis or monitoring the patient. And regarding the Afghan University of Medical Science, I'm very, very grateful to my dear friend, Dr. Maimoud Ahmadzai, who's also one of the co-founders of the Afghan diaspora. He's a radio-oncologist in Switzerland. He established something so unique for Afghanistan and for Afghan women within the last year with other colleagues. And I'm so glad that I could be part of this project in Germany. I mean, as we all know, the Taliban regime are in power in Afghanistan and education, especially for women and girls, is not only controversial, but it's partly banned under the Taliban regime. And thanks to so many supporters inside and outside Afghanistan and within the international medical community, we were able to establish a platform so that medical students, female medical students, can continue their studies, attend lectures, and yeah, thankfully expand with digital offerings.
Wow. I mean, what incredible work to be part of. I don't know how you find time to fit it all in. I was actually reading a previous interview that you gave to the German newspaper Die Welt, and you mentioned the importance of role models in medical school. Would you say you had a specific role model that inspired you and kept you motivated to complete your medical educational journey?
Yeah, to be honest, my parents have always been my biggest role models because, I mean, they shaped their lives, they changed their lives, their friendships, their families, their responsibilities, so that me and my six siblings, we can achieve our goals here in Germany. And this is something that I will never forget, because my father used to say he could have went to anywhere in the world, but he said he would choose Germany so that we could have a proper education. And I have to admit, becoming a doctor was never on my radar from the beginning, honestly. I was always someone who was very socially and politically engaged. I loved history. And then at some point, I don't know, I was maybe 13 or 14 years old. I was sitting with an old friend of my father who came from Afghanistan, who was sick, and he received medical treatment here in Germany. And when he asked me what I wanted to become, I told him that I did not know what I wanted to do or study or wanted to become, maybe something like, I don't know, in history or something in sociology. So I remember him saying that it would be very nice in a very gentle tone that if I could become a doctor, I could help people. And I remember not only that I made him this promise, I hope that in his eyes and his mind, I have become a worthy and good doctor, because unfortunately, yeah, during the Taliban regime, he was murdered. This is one thing why I do what I do. And on the other hand, it's because of my family, my friends, my environment, the people that I've encountered over the years who always made me feel that I should keep going, because it's not just me who can benefit from all of this. And yeah, of course, during my studies, all my classmates, everyone who suffered with me from day one, day and night in the library doing night shift. Yeah, we drove each other crazy, you know, by constantly quizzing one another. And today are just as successful and passionate in their professions. And this is something that also like giving me the courage and the confidence to do what I do.
Wow. I'm so sorry to hear that. And I absolutely agree with you, you know, in terms of role models, you know, thinking about your parents, because parents make such big sacrifices for their children. And I'm sure it wasn't easy for your parents and for you to move to a completely different country, you know, where you didn't speak the language. And I thought your answer was, yeah, really beautiful. So thank you. You're currently working as a resident physician in cardiology and internal medicine. And on top of that, you're managing the emergency department, intensive care unit, the stroke unit, and the chest pain unit. What drew you to those particular specialties?
Well, it's also part of the rotation that we do. So you have to take care of all those departments, but it's fun because I like what I'm doing. And I'm a trained radiology assistant, and I developed a strong interest from the beginning in everything that's technical and everything that's in radiology. And I thought to myself, I would pursue a career in radiology, honestly. And then in my final year of my studies, I encountered a highly experienced specialist in cardiology who is now a senior attending physician at another hospital. And we hit right off right away. Like, moreover, we had the same background. He was, of course, quite older than me, but he went all those ways. And he asked me at the time which specialty I wanted to pursue. But I was still undecided because, radiology, the places are very rare. And I don't know if I get a job in radiology, and I was kind of depressed and demotivated. The only thing that I knew was I don't want to become a surgeon. So I felt a little bit lost. However, we got so along very well from the start, and he became a mentor to me. And yeah, he was a cardiologist, internal medicine doctor, intensive care unit doctor. And as the days and weeks passed by, and I was able to learn so much from him, eventually the day came when I had to make a final decision, because I had my exams, I was a doctor, but I didn't know which career path I was going to. And he contacted me and he recommended me that I approach his former mentor, who fortunately is now also a very good friend of mine, whom I still seek advice from today. And he insisted that I should go to him, learn from him. So I applied, not knowing about all of the fields, but I said, okay, if there's someone who can teach me, I should go and pursue it. So I applied, I got the job, thank God. And as a beginner, it's reassuring to have someone to learn from, right? Like a mentor who can truly teach you all the facets of medicine and not only everything that's technical. So therefore, I'm very glad that I ended up in this field, because I did not only learn the technical aspects, but also gained a significant understanding of the human side of medicine, realizing, I mean, that it's just not about treating the patient, but also addressing all aspects around them, like to ensure optimal care at the end of the day. And yeah, this might sum up why I ended up in this field of medicine.
Yeah, amazing. I mean, I think that leads us really well into our next question. So in your experience, what are some common challenges or misconceptions that healthcare professionals may face when providing care to patients from diverse cultural backgrounds? And how do you think these can be addressed?
I believe the biggest mistake one can make is not taking the patients seriously or trivializing their suffering. What we know from valid data, for example, for the United States, is that people of color who are patients receiving significantly fewer pain medication than non-POC patients, and patients with perceived immigrant backgrounds may receive inferior medical treatment compared to those without such backgrounds. And I have to say, unfortunately, we don't have, or valid data is still lacking in Germany, but I'm confident that we will have this data in due time. But I think it's most important when a patient comes to you or to me with pain or with distress, we should take them seriously. And this might sound trivial or simplified, but in practice, it can sometimes be overlooked. Unfortunately, in all the stress of the emergency room or the intensive care unit or on regular wards, you often see patients suffering from pain or not receiving the comprehensive diagnostics, they didn't receive sufficient pain medication, or we don't take them seriously. And this should not be our standard as doctors, on the contrary, regardless where they're from or where they're coming from. And I have to acknowledge that people from different cultures or backgrounds, they have the same physiology and biochemistry and anatomy, just like a white European people. I mean, this might sound obvious. Of course, they're human beings. We're all human beings. But I also encounter the opposite when patients report different experiences with other doctors. And yeah, of course, in our training, we are taught to assess things or to scale things, whether it's physical or visual. However, I mean, we forgot that the rest of the world may perceive and express feelings, pain, or suffering differently. Some may vocalize their pain or suffering, like loudly, while others may be more reserved due to their, I don't know, culture or religion, for example, feeling obligated to visit the sick in large numbers or not to visit them. And fortunately, thank God, nowadays we can easily educate ourselves on these matters with just a click on the internet. But I think the most important thing, however, is to approach the patient without bias, to understand that if my patient is in the hospital or in my emergency department, if there may be a language barrier, there can be a family member who can translate for me or to help elevate the patient's fear, or I can use some apps, new technologies. And I think we should no longer meet people from a condescending position as doctors and healthcare workers, but look them in the eye and see them as a fellow human being who needs help.
Absolutely. Really, really brilliant answer. And I think it must be difficult from the perspective of working in an emergency room, definitely from a cultural perspective. But I wonder, is it difficult sometimes, you know, if you're working such a long period of time and you're seeing so many patients, does it ever get difficult to keep a perspective and have a fresh face for each person?
It is. Honestly, it is. It is tough, but it takes experience.
Yeah.
But it's honestly, it's very hard. It's very tough. Because when you start your journey as a doctor, you have no experience what it means to organize yourself, what it means to treat patients, to go on wards, to go on rounds, to talk with nurses and all the other professions in your hospital, and you might drown. This was like my first 6 months. But then you realize, okay, this is a human being, and I can ask everyone in the hospital who's more experienced what to do, and how to do it and how to approach. And this gave me a huge confidence.
I think that's really good advice as well to give to our students who might be listening. And how can medical students and healthcare professionals improve their cultural competence and provide more equitable care to their patients from diverse backgrounds?
Yeah, well, encounters always help to break down prejudice, right? And in this case, I agree with that sentiment. We should have more encounters. We should meet more people. And thankfully, unfortunately, there is no hospital in Germany without a diverse team, whether it's in the medical profession, in nursing, and all the other stuff. And what I mean by this is we as doctors, we need to step out of our academic bubble, approach the nursing staff and other hospital personnel. They might come from different backgrounds as we do, and we should ask questions if you don't understand something or if you are not sure how to handle a patient. It's not only our superior doctors we should ask, but also the nurses. And we can also search in the internet, read the textbook, or look it up on AMBOSS, but it doesn't hurt to ask the nurses and all the other staff, as I said before, or maybe just ask the patients of the family. And when this patient has, I don't know, like a long-lasting chronic illness, it doesn't hurt for us to consult the general practitioner either, because they know the patient and we can help them. And I feel that many still experience a very hierarchical tone in hospitals during their training, but I don't think that it should be the case nowadays. If, as a doctor, if I stop asking questions, I'm giving away my most valuable tool that I have, like the ability to speak and to inquire. And specifically, what I would wish for is that we would learn intercultural medicine as part of our curriculums and in our medical studies right from the start, to break down prejudice and dispel myths and not let certain stereotypes take hold. I mean, yeah, because sooner or later we will encounter a patient who we may not understand, who doesn't speak English or German or our language, or yeah, of course, or to whom we must deliver a life-altering diagnosis. We don't know how they react because we assume that everyone reacts like a normal European or like a white European or like someone from our surrounding. I mean, the good thing in medicine is becoming more and more diverse. But this doesn't just mean there are more people from different cultures, but also there are more individuals from financial backgrounds who now have the opportunity to study, and they bring new perspectives, which are resources, and we must tap on those resources. We must use them as the additional tools in our diagnostic and therapeutic toolbox.
I think this is a really great point that you make. And again, something that might sound simplistic, but to ask questions, and it's something that a lot of people in lots of areas of life don't do, because we're afraid that we will be judged for asking a stupid question. And I'm sure everybody's been, you know, in a class where someone said, you know, no question is a stupid question, but it's absolutely true. No question is a stupid question. And in my experience, if you think of a question in your mind, someone else is thinking it as well. They might just be too afraid to ask. And so I think the point you made about, you know, challenging this kind of hierarchical form of teaching and asking questions and speaking to patients and asking families questions is a really great point that you made. Absolutely. Well, there's been some brilliant nuggets of advice in this interview, Navad. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I have to ask you for just one more bit of advice, which we ask all of our interviewees. So if you could give our listeners any advice beyond the textbook, what would you say?
Oh, okay. This is a very philosophical and difficult question. I'm still convinced that the concept of encountering, of approaching each other, speaking together and asking questions are the most important asset when it comes to intercultural medicine, but when it comes to be also a doctor. I mean, I would particularly recommend the younger colleagues and students to look beyond their usual questionnaires and multiple choice tests to view the world and realize that we as a doctors, we are not just doctors in Europe, in Germany, in the United States. Around the world, we are doctors. So therefore, we should strive to break down our prejudices and stereotypes wherever possible and approach the world with an objective view. Yet we should be subjective enough to counteract discrimination and discriminatory behavior, I mean, especially in our profession.
Amazing. Thank you very, very much. And once again, Navad, thank you so much for giving us some of your precious time, because I know you're such a busy person.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, truly been inspiring to chat to you today.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me on your program.
Well, that's it for today's episode of the AMBOSS podcast, Beyond the Textbook. Thank you again, Navad, for letting us experience some of your journey and for the wonderful insights that you provided. Thank you to everybody who's been listening today, and we hope that the episode sparked an interest for you in intercultural medicine and advocacy. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast for more exciting episodes covering everything in healthcare and medical education. And please don't forget to leave us a great 5-star review. Take care, everyone. This has been Sophie Neal with AMBOSS Beyond the Textbook.
The links in the description can give you a more in-depth understanding of these concepts. If you like this episode, please give us a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. You can check out the AMBOSS platform for your medical studies and sign up for a free 5-day trial at AMBOSS.com.